the coalition is working on its immigration policy after settling a joint energy and climate policy on the weekend. The coalition put all its policies under review after its election defeat in May this year. Yesterday, we heard from One Nation leader Pauline Hanson, who welcomed the coalition's dumping of its commitment to net zero emissions by 2050.
You know, One Nation, we've been setting the agenda for many years now to do with mass migration, to do with, you know, climate change, with The Voice. Everything that we've set in place, the coalition have followed our lead on this. So this is just another one. The coalition doesn't know where they are. They're not even in sync with their own counterparts in the states, because the states are glued to net zero. So what is the federal going to do about it when the states don't follow their lead? They are in such disarray.
That's Pauline Hanson, the One Nation leader, on Breakfast yesterday. Well, joining me now is Susan Lee, the leader of the opposition. Susan Lee, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Good morning, Sally. Good to be on the program.
Is the coalition following the lead of One Nation?
The Liberal Party has set its own agenda on energy, and it's a very important one, because what it reflects, Sally, is that Australians deserve affordable energy and responsible emissions reduction. We believe we can do both, but affordable energy must come first. Now, Labor is setting targets they just can't meet at a cost that Australians just can't afford. Consider this. Since 2005, Australia has reduced emissions at nearly double the rate of developed countries. But to reach net zero by 2050, Labor would have to double this again. Now, the effect of that is that power prices are increasing 40% since Labor was elected. And as I travel the country talking about our affordable energy plan, I'm talking to mums, I'm talking to small business owners, and they're all describing the struggle they're facing, because when energy is unaffordable, everything is unaffordable. The cost of energy is in every step of the supply chain, with whatever you buy and whatever you do.
The path that the Labor government is taking, it received a resounding election victory in May. Is this not the path that the Australian people want to go down at the moment, that they have confidence in net zero?
Well, it comes to my point, Sally, that by setting targets they can't possibly meet, not even being able to tell Australians what they cost, the government is telling Australians mistruths on this. So they aren't fronting up. They aren't being honest. They aren't acknowledging what is happening. And the proof points of that are that for two elections, the Prime Minister stood there and said your power prices would come down by $275. Instead, Australians are paying around $1,300 more. So this Prime Minister can't be trusted on this issue. And the government is refusing to acknowledge the real pain that Australian households are feeling and facing. Now, 40% increase in energy, I mean, to some people, these are just numbers that we say. But when you meet mums, like I was once, well, like I still am, but when my kids were small and I was struggling with the family budget, sitting at the kitchen table, working out how to, you know, make it all pay at the end of a fortnight. And now as a grandmother, I look at the next generation and I want them to inherit a better Australia. Instead, it looks as though the Australia they'll inherit will have a worse standard of living. These things are not right, and that's why our affordable energy plan with responsible emissions reduction is the right one for Australia at this time.
What will it cost to get to net zero? What's the cost that you're operating off?
Well, cost is really important for Australians, and we've seen how costs have skyrocketed. Now, if you consider that for Australia to reach the 2035 targets that were just announced, 62 to 70%, the government could not even tell us what the costs were and are. So we know that by not expanding capacity in the electricity grid, you are going to have this continual constraint on costs. That's why our plan puts downward pressure on costs, because we allow more gas into the system.
What do you think the overall cost is going to be to get to net zero by 2050?
Well, Australians know what the cost is now, 40% higher power price since Labor was elected. The cost of net zero is for Labor to answer, not for us, Sally, and they don't know the answer to that question. So, you know, your point is about cost is one well made, but it is one for Labor to answer. And I just want to demonstrate how
the coalition doesn't have a figure as to how much it believes net zero, by 2050 will cost overall?
Labor doesn't have a figure. We have a plan. And the point is that if you look at our plan, it injects more supply into the system, which pushes costs
down. If we're arguing about cost, just to be clear, because some different numbers have been thrown around and there's been some concern about misrepresentation from Net Zero Australia. Sometimes figures have been thrown around of $8 or $9 trillion. Are they figures that you support or think are realistic, accurate?
I just know that the cost is blowing out under Labor, which is why the cost of your power bill is going up. Sally, have you asked the PM what the cost is? Have you got a straight answer from him? The government is in charge of all of these levers for energy policy right now. What we're saying is if we're fortunate enough to be elected, this is what we would do. And between now and then, I don't know what the cost is going to do other than it's clearly going up. And I want to describe the reasons why Labor's plan is so dreadful, because by not inviting all technologies to the table, by not introducing more gas into the system, by not recognising that affordability should be the central proposition, not working backwards from an ideological objective that they can't meet and they can't explain and they can't cost either, we're actually doing Australians an incredible disservice. Now, we know that gas is vital to how we power the transition to renewables. And Sally, I'm in support of a transition to affordable energy, including renewables. And I want to make clear, this is not about taking any energy source out of the system. This is about managing the whole system responsibly. Right now, we export LNG to the rest of the world. We're probably the second or third largest exporter. That LNG is helping our near neighbours in Japan and Southeast Asia decarbonise. But we're importing LNG from the Middle East through import terminals that are being built. How does that make sense? That gas that we're importing is coming from the Middle East. Imagine the carbon footprint of reducing it to liquid, okay, putting it in a ship, travelling all this way. Okay. Our plan is about the abundance of Australian energy that should be for Australians first. We're standing on this huge reserve of gas. We've got an abundant supply of energy, and yet the government is not utilising our strengths for the future of our citizens.
Let's turn to another issue now. You've indicated your focus now is we'll be having a look at immigration policy, and previously said that the number of migrants coming to Australia needs to be lower. Given Australia's demand for certain types of immigrants due to labour shortages, where do you believe the numbers could be reduced?
Well, we've been working on migration policy over the last 6 months. I said when I became leader, the number was too high. And Sally, in the coming weeks, we'll release the principles of our migration policy. But the numbers are far too high under Labor, and this does need to be addressed as a priority.
Which categories are too fat at the moment, do you think?
Well, I'm pleased that you've mentioned categories, because this speaks to the detail of what we're working through now and the principles that we will soon announce. We obviously have many different streams within the different visa categories, working holiday makers, skilled visas, humanitarian, family reunion, students, etc. But what we know is that Labor doesn't have a plan here. Now, their figure, their net overseas migration, is 100,000 higher than it was in pre-COVID levels. They've also got budget papers that indicate 1.8 million more migrants in the next 5 years. I should say 1.8 million people over 5 years. Mm. Now, there has to be a plan to balance that intake with infrastructure. There simply has to be, and there clearly isn't, because Labor isn't giving us all the numbers. It's revising them continually. It's blowing out its own forecast, sometimes by as much as 100%. And we really have to get this right, because Australian communities are experiencing the pressures of the roads, the housing, the schools, the hospitals.
Now, and also the benefits of migrant workers, whether they're doctors, nurses, aged care workers.
And indeed the benefits of Australia being a migrant nation. Sally, I was a migrant to Australia, and we have incredible migrant communities around this country. I meet them every day, and I want to make this clear. They talk to me about the pressures they're under with infrastructure too.
So you're listening to Radio National Breakfast.
Failures of infrastructure.
My guest is the opposition leader, Susan Lee. Time's running away from us. A former Liberal Senator for New South Wales, Holly Hughes, who's reportedly quit the party, has told Nine Papers it's clear that you as leader have been undermined from day one of your leadership. Is that a fair assessment?
Holly's a dear friend. I've known her for 25 years and, you know, we're still dear friends. She's, I should say to your listeners, she's recently moved to the Central West to open a pub near Lithgow, and there'll be a lot of wisdom at the front bar spoken there. But importantly, Holly's statement speaks to the warmth of that friendship that I've just described and her passion over many years, her passion over many years for families, particularly families with children with autism or for communities, for a great cause.
I need to bring you back to the question, Susan Lee. Is she right? Is it a fair assessment?
I'll leave the commentary to others and the comments on the commentary to others, Sally.
Just briefly, how do you, within the party and the commentary of members of the party, how do you draw the line between disagreement and disloyalty? What's your view on that?
We speak passionately in our party room about the things that matter in the national interest for Australians. And I'm so proud that the discussion we had most recently on affordable energy and responsible emissions reduction was one that the entire Liberal Party and indeed the Nationals signed onto on Sunday. This is something that...
Speaking outside the party room?
This is something we come together with in the national interest. And as I said, I'll leave others' comments to others and the commentary on those. But I've never taken a backward step on members of my team speaking up in defence of their views, how they believe we can best serve Australians, because our values don't change and haven't changed. And they are for Australians who work hard, who give back to their communities, who deserve to keep more of what they earn, who want a government that manages the budget responsibly. These are things I've talked to in key policy speeches since I became leader. We're here for those Australians, and we're absolutely here for Australians who are struggling with the government's cost of energy right now, because it is just not fair to have these skyrocketing costs embedded in every stage of your life. And right now we're fighting that fight on behalf of Australians.